I'm Vic Cohen, and it's a fair question. It's a fair question. It's a fair question. I'm Vic Cohen, and it's a fair question. It's a fair, it's a fair, it's a fair, it's a fair question. I'm Vic Cohen, and it's a fair, it's a fair, it's a fair, it's a fair question. Hello, everyone. I'm Vic Cohen, and it is a fair question. This is the show where any question is a good question. There's no such thing as a bad question, and I will be asking some questions today, some very penetrating questions of our very special guest, Guyron Barnes. Hello, Guyron.
Hey, Vic. How you doing?
I'm well. Am I hearing you okay? Are we hearing him well? We need you right on top of that mic.
Okay.
Great to see you. Now, Guyron and I go back a long ways. We worked together on Deal or No Deal. Guyron was the security for Howie Mandel, and he is a professional bodyguard, as we like to call him, bodyguard to the stars?
Everybody has different terms. We prefer to be called a protection specialist or executive protection specialist or bodyguard.
Or mall security guard.
Oh, no Paul Blart's here.
No, you're the real deal. Now, before we get going here, because I got a lot of questions for you. First of all, are you packing heat?
Yes.
Okay, so you have a gun on you as we speak?
Yes.
Okay, can I see it? I mean, not like in a, like showing it off way, but we've never done a show. This is our third show, and I've never actually interviewed someone who's got a loaded weapon. And this could go in my favor, because I could be very protected, or I could be very dead.
Oh, no, you're very protected, Vic. I mean, you know, we go back a long way, like you said.
Yeah, well, let me see, may I see the firearm?
Sure.
Okay, is it loaded?
Of course.
Okay, that's a real gun. Okay, you can put it back. That's good. I see it's a real gun. He's the real deal. Okay, that makes me nervous. Do you get nervous carrying a gun?
No, actually, I feel pretty secure because it's not so much the gun. It's just the fact that I'm in a position to be able to help people. I mean, I get paid for what I do, and I get paid very well, but you know what? We're all here to help each other. And if I happen to be someplace in public and somebody needs assistance, you know, I'll be there to help them.
Right. Guyron, let's talk about some of the celebrities who you have guarded. Okay.
Sure.
Can you give me a little bit of a laundry list?
Yes. I've protected. I started out in the business with Aaron Spelling.
Okay. And if people don't know him, he's a legend as a producer.
Oh, yeah.
Beverly Hills 90210 and a million other shows, Dallas, et cetera, lots of shows.
Yeah, exactly. And I pretty much fell into that job. And okay. I happened to be paired up with a professional who basically showed me the ropes for the EP or executive protection business.
Okay, great. So Aaron Spelling, earlier we were talking a little bit before the show, you mentioned Roseanne Barr.
Yes, yes.
Okay. Paul McCartney, you had mentioned?
Yes.
Okay. And it's quite a list.
Denise Richards.
Okay.
D.L. Hewley, and you know, a lot of different celebrities.
Right, and on Deal or No Deal, you were Howie Mandel's pretty much his personal security on the show.
Right, I was assigned to Howie, but also I coordinated all the other agents that you know that were there, and so you know our job is multifaceted. Of course, protecting Howie, but also protecting everybody else. That's
right.
One thing that a lot of people don't get is that we're there pretty much, especially out in that type of. For us to protect everybody.
Okay. Now, would you be willing to take a bullet for Roseanne?
Sure.
You would?
Rosie's a sweetie.
You take a bullet to the head?
You know what? When those type of things happens, that means something went wrong, but ultimately I'm there to protect.
So you would take a bullet to the head. I'm talking right between the eyes for Roseanne.
You know what? I would rather take it in the chest or another place, but if it happened...
If you had your choice of where you could take a bullet
mm-hmm.
for Roseanne...
That would be a bullet for anybody.
Yeah.
My left pinky toe.
Yeah, okay. No one wants to get shot.
No.
But that's kind of part of the job, right? You're Secret Service, but instead of the president, it's Roseanne.
Definitely, definitely. Actually, a lot of our training and tactics are based on the Secret Service model.
Oh, that's interesting. I did not know that. You started out in as a cop, right? Street cop?
Yes, I was a street cop for the city of Monterey for approximately a year.
Monterey. Now... With all due respect, I always love this. When someone says, with all due respect, you know they're going to say something that's really insulting. But aren't hall monitor jobs in South Central more dangerous than being a cop in Monterey?
You know, Monterey is a very affluent city.
Yeah.
And very, you know, at that time when I was there, basically most of the crime was burglaries or robberies.
Yeah, so you didn't really see a lot.
not a whole lot, definitely not compared to Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. But we had our moments. You know, we've had murders and bank robberies and things like that.
Now, most of your career, which I find fascinating, we'll get back to the celebrity stuff in a little bit, but you worked in a state prison, is that right?
Yes. Because I'm retired. I'm actually retired from the California Department of Corrections.
Okay, and for people who don't know, that's basically our prison system.
Right, right.
And what did brought you to the prison?
Well, you know what? When I left Monterey, I was going to transfer to LAPD, and I had gotten out of the Army, and I had worked for the city correction, for the Department of Corrections for a couple months while waiting to get picked up by the city of Monterey. So when I left Monterey, I had what was called reinstatement rights. So I reinstated to go back to work for the state for, which is going to be temporary, but I got to like it. And it was good money also.
That's interesting. Now, what is it about? Now, there's a lot of that we see on TV about prison life, and I don't know how much of it's true or not. And so it's really cool to talk to you about it because I know you're pretty open about whatever goes on in that environment. One of the things that I always hear or think about, I think about this too much, maybe, is it true like guys are just masturbating 24/7 in prison?
Well, not necessarily 24/7, but usually when the lights goes off, that's when everybody, they break out their fifi bags and
they break out what?
A fifi bag.
What's a fifi bag?
Well, basically a fifi bag is either a t-shirt or a towel that's folded and configured in a way to where a man can apply it to his appendage and get satisfaction from it.
So it's a t-shirt vagina?
Definitely.
Okay.
Or if they like it rough, they get a towel.
What is it called just ejaculating in your tube sock? Because that's what I usually do.
Really?
Is there a name for that? What's her name? Because it's not Fifi, right?
Well, yeah, but that'd be just like getting a crack whore off of Fifth Street out here or going to the Mustang Ranch in Nevada, I mean, they look down on you if you just have a tube sock.
Really? So do all the guys have Fifis?
Most of them, yes.
Mm-hmm. And so is it, I mean, like after a while, you could probably crack that Fifi in half, right? I mean, it's a lot of sperm.
I imagine, I haven't really had the experience of handling them. So,
do you know how to fold one? Cause I would, maybe I'd benefit from that myself.
Yeah, I do know how to fold one.
Okay. Maybe after the show, you could show me and Jeremy.
No problem.
Now, Jeremy's running the show today, producing.
Hey, Jeremy. Now, it just depends if you like it rough or if you like it easy. We can use
different folds for what you like.
Definitely.
Oh, okay.
It's tailor-made.
That's good.
Now, do you think it's fair to say, I hear this and I don't know if it's true or not. Tell me that a lot of men go into prison straight, they have gay love, and they leave straight. What's your take on this?
My take is this. I think if a person is gay, they're gay, and whatever, a name that they attach to it or a rationale that they use for it, I guess it's okay for them and it makes them feel better about it. But I think for the most part, most guys who go into prison that are straight come out straight and they don't even, they have their fifi bags.
Okay. So that's how you know the straight ones because they got a fifi bag. What if your fifi bag has a mustache on it? I guess that would mean maybe you like both, right?
It could be, yeah. Or they have a Tom Selleck, thing. Fixation, yeah.
Okay. What's the craziest sexual, not violent, but just let's say in a consenting, loving prison kind of love making way, situation you've walked into?
Well, I've walked into guys in broom closets. In prison, they have a lot of places that they call the blind.
Okay.
And the blind is a place that's away from prying eyes of staff. And so you got your laundry rooms, you got your water closets, you have certain areas of the institution of itself. That people can go and not be seen for, maybe a minute or two.
Really? That's all it takes me. So that's perfect.
Yeah.
Now, what can you do in a minute?
You know what? They can do a lot, apparently, because, a lot of times you walk around and you just happen to walk by. A lot of times you know what's going on because they usually have somebody watching for them. So once you work in a prison, you become a great observer of human nature and mannerisms. And so...
Okay. You know what? I want to just real sorry, but Gordon, we got some great information from you. I'm loving the interview. Anyone listening would like to get on this. And if you're listening in prison, we got a question. We got a lot of prisoner listeners.
Oh.
Number's 800-893-9562. That's 800-893-9562. Again, I'm talking with Guyron here, Guyron Barnes. I like to call him bodyguard to the stars, celebrity bodyguard. He likes to call himself an executive something or other. But I think it sounds sexier for the exec, I think you need to change that, Guyron. Rethink that.
You know what? And I do, but a lot of times, you get a lot of posers out there. So right. That's the first thing that they come out with. And that's one thing in our industry that I'm a member of the North American Bodyguard Association. And
who guards them when they have a meeting? Is there one higher?
There's no higher. You know, we're omnipotent.
Right.
When it comes to that.
I didn't even know that there's a society. It sounds like the conventions would suck because it would be basically a bunch of guys and lesbians, right? I mean, what would go on with the security guard convention?
No. Like I said, we're not security guards. We're executive protection agents.
That might be insulting you. I don't mean to.
Yeah, no. And, you know, here's the thing. You know, one of the things that the NABA stands for are standards of excellence for the profession, because you get so many guys. How many celebrities have you seen that become total train wrecks and they have security around them?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and those people, for the most part, are not professionals. But we get lumped in with them, you know. But we have some true leaders in our organizations, leaders, mentors.
Well, you really are, there are crazy people out there.
Oh, definitely.
And so your job is serious.
Yes, it is.
And,
yes.
I think you're right. A lot of the media, security people kind of look like the background, like as if they're just props, but you really become very involved in the celebrity's private life. You know what's going on, who to look for.
Definitely. And you know, a lot of people don't see that there's a lot of work that goes into protecting someone. You know, you just see people show up. You may happen to see people show up with security, but there's tons and tons of work that goes in to preparing for that appearance.
Right. Well, again, if you're just joining us, which would be right now, like listening live, if you're just joining us and you've been listening from a download, you're really fucked up because we started this thing a while ago. And where have you been? It's been rolling on your computer or wherever, and you haven't been here. That's unusual.
They're on a Fifi Bag site.
They're in a Fifi Bag. There probably is a website. How do you spell that? F-I-F-I?
F-I-F-I.
Okay, great. Again, the number here is 800-893-9562. And now, in prison, and this is a fair question, and in the show I ask pretty much anything that I think is a legitimate fair question.
Sure.
You've got a lot of men who are rather attractive, I would imagine, just like men are. Some are attractive, some aren't.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever, just kind of being around prison life, found a man, an inmate, attractive?
No, I've never.
It's a fair question.
It's a fair question, and
because it is in the air.
I've never found any, you know, attractive. But there are some guys that come in who've been altered. You know, their hormones have been altered, and you got to take a second look. Sometimes you got to do a second glance.
You're telling me that their penis has become a vagina?
No, I'm telling you that their body. You know, they come in, you know, they're going through different stages of sexual reassignment, as they call it.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, like I said, when I first started working there, I had to do a double take because...
Okay. You know what I'm hearing here with... I think you're trying to say this, and you can let me know if I'm rephrasing what you're trying to say. There are men who have gorgeous breasts, and when you see their breasts, you get very turned on.
You don't
get... Hold on, this is what you're saying. And then you can tell me if I'm right.
Okay.
You see these breasts and you're like, holy shit, man, that chick's got a, I don't like the term, but great breasts. I'll just say breasts.
Okay.
And then you look and you see the rest and you're like, wait a minute, I can't be thinking that. Because attached to those beautiful, delicious breasts I want to fondle, if I could, and we weren't in prison, there's a penis that's getting enlarged as I look at it. Is that what you're saying?
No, that's not what
no.
I'm saying.
Okay. I was wrong. Okay. What are you saying?
I'm saying at first glance, you know, it's just like, Santa Monica Boulevard.
Okay? Right, okay.
It's like Santa Monica Boulevard. So you may be driving down Santa Monica Boulevard and you'll look and then you do a double take.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you get, you were telling me that it's quite a treat for the guys when there are some lady guards, is that right?
Oh, yeah. Like I said, especially... If a female happens to be working a night shift, because on the night shift you have to do a count periodically, and it has to be where the officer would go down the bank of cells and actually look in to make sure that the inmate is in his cell. And you know what? If they're not showing any skin, just say they're all covered up or wrapped up in a blanket.
Head covered, everything covered.
Yes, everything is covered. You have to tap on the door and say, "Show me some skin."
Okay.
To make sure that it's not a dummy. And so a lot of these guys, they take advantage because that's the only female attention, I guess you could say, that mm-hmm. they're getting while they're there. And so a lot of times they time their masturbation to the female's count.
Huh. And is that's considered an honor for the lady? Or?
Well, I don't know if it's so much an honor, but I mean, you know, I guess the rationale from the inmate is that, you know, he's taking whatever he can get.
Really?
Yeah.
And do they ever time that with you when you've been visiting?
You know what? That's sort of like, especially if you're what's called a fish or a new officer working.
What's a fish? A fish is the term for new officer?
Yes.
Okay.
And so if they know you're a fish, they'll do what they call busting your eye. Okay.
Is that where? Okay.
And busting your eye means that when you're doing your count and you happen to look through that, 4x12-foot window to see if the inmate's in there, you know, he's exposing himself, you know, and he may be manipulating himself.
And then
they see the shock and surprise on your face and they laugh and they said, "Aha, I busted your eye."
Right. Okay. That's considered comedy and humor.
Definitely.
Okay, good. So if I, trying to think, I guess out here, that's just not part of life.
No. There are more diversions.
Yeah. Now you've told me when we were talking earlier that part of your job as a professional
mm-hmm.
is not to really share, you know, you need to keep celebrities' lives private.
Sure.
You're the ears and eyes, you see what goes on.
Right, and see, but part of what they pay for is our discretion, you know, also. And, you know, we professionals hold themselves to a higher standard. You know, for me, you'll never see a tell-all book or, you know, me disclosing anything intimate about anything that I've seen or heard.
Mm-hmm. Now, having said that, tell me the funniest thing that ever happened with Roseanne.
You know, nothing's really funny. Roseanne's a sweetheart. Matter of fact, her whole family is. Her mom, you know, I call her Booby. You know, she's your typical Jewish mother, you know, always making sure that I'm fed. And you know, I have a blanket when I'm staying there at night. And you know, she comes in and it's like, you know what? I'm being paid to be taken care of by a Jewish mother.
Hmm. Well, she seems to, like, tend to marry a lot of people that are just around her. Like, you know. And
didn't she marry her bodyguard? Wasn't that
her
first husband?
I think he might have. Did we have a call? I thought I saw something up here a minute. No? We do have a call. Let's throw that in. Hello, caller? Drop call.
Yeah, hi.
Oh, there you are. How are you? What's your name?
Steve.
Steve, thanks for calling.
I have a question about, you know, I've seen that Heidi Klum is dating her bodyguard now after her breakup. And I was wondering, you know, does Garon, does he pretty much date? And is it assumed that if you're a bodyguard for a single woman or someone who's recently broken up, that you know, you can make love to her?
Great question. You want stay on the line. Garon?
You know what? I mean, there's been some women that I would love to make love to.
Roseanne?
It's
a fair question.
Roseanne's a sweetheart. But like I said, there's some beautiful
nice
women.
Go on.
And, you know what? That just wouldn't be the thing to do for two reasons. Number one, it's just not professional, you know. And a lot of times, you know, I've heard of that happening periodically. You know, I've heard rumors about different guys, but they're usually gone, you know. So you lose your livelihood also, or you lose that client.
Right.
So if Heidi Klum wanted to make love to you, you would pass?
Yes.
Garon, I don't believe you. I think you are so full of shit.
No, well,
I mean, no offense, but if I were alive, the needle would be buried in the red. You would go down on her in 2 seconds.
Not if I was working for her, no.
Come on.
Would you just use your napkin or towel or T-shirt?
No, I have a woman, so
Aaron, you know what? I think this caller is really making a good point, and that is that you're full of shit. Because I know you. I've worked with you. If Heidi Klum's one of the most gorgeous women in the world.
She is, and actually, I've had the opportunity to work. There were a couple of years ago. Matter of fact, when we were doing Deal or No Deal, there were her and her seal were filming a Volkswagen commercial in downtown L.A.
Yeah.
And it was just for the German market. And I was assigned actually to seal, but Heidi was there. And so I've been around Heidi Klum.
The caller is asking, Steve is asking a very specific question. He's saying, Heidi Klum makes a move on you.
Mm-hmm.
She's single.
Mm-hmm.
She wants to make love to you. What do you do?
If Heidi Klum wants to make love to me and I'm working for her?
Right.
No.
Okay. I still don't believe you.
I would think that that would be part of it. I would think that if somebody were in that situation and you wouldn't make love to them, I mean, part of you know, guarding their body would be to physically be as close as possible.
That's actually a good point, Steve.
Well, you know, that's close protection, but it's not in the contract.
But, you know, part of what Steve's trying to say, I think, is that you're there to serve her.
No, we're there to protect her.
Well, you'd wear protection.
It's like an escort in my mind. I'm going to listen. Thanks.
Thank you, Steve, for the call. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you. Again, the number here is 800-893-9562. I'm talking to celebrity guard. He hates that.
Bodyguard.
Bodyguard to the celebrities. Guy Ron is here. People want to follow you. You're kind of all into technology, right? You're on
sure.
Facebook, Twitter.
Yes.
Okay, great.
And my Twitter page is Big Daddy G number one.
Okay. Is that what they called you in prison? No? No comment.
No comment.
No comment. Now, you're single, right?
Yes.
Is the stereotype true? I mean, you know, the cop working the crazy hours, seeing he comes in, feel like innocent and wanting to save the world. And maybe 10, 20 years later, he's bitter. He's seen the dreck of society. He's turned into a miserable man because of just society's taken him down. I mean, is this, you know, broken marriage? Is this the norm?
You know what? It does happen, you know, but I think, especially nowadays, you know, that stereotype was pretty much, and divorce is still prevalent in law enforcement. But I think that, you know, it all depends on how you deal with it. You know, you have to find diversions, things that interest you outside the job. You know, if you're a cop 24/7, yeah, you're going to burn yourself out. And, you know, that opens up the door to a host of problems.
Have you ever been married?
Never been married. No, legally, no.
Close to it?
Close to it, yes.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you think the job got in the way, the career?
It's not so much the job got in the way. It was just that I'm a commitment phobe.
Mm-hmm. Ironic that you, for a career, kept people committed behind bars, yet you yourself have a commitment problem. as long as you can leave the prison.
That, and you know what? I had some wild days, you know, and there's been some women who I met during those wild days.
In prison?
No, not in prison, outside prison. Actually, well, I worked with a couple. But anyway, there's been some wild days. And you know how you look back, you know, as you get older and you think about that one that you maybe you should have settled down with. And
right.
You know, so that's pretty much my story.
Mm-hmm. So you wouldn't attribute it so much to the career, but more to just who you are.
Exactly.
Okay. And you know, what's interesting about you, Guyron, is you do have a positive spirit about you.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's still a glitter in your eye, you know, a sense of like an enjoyment of life. You don't seem down about really anything.
Well, you know, because I've been down, you know what I mean? So this is what you're seeing is the other side.
Well, tell me about the downside. What was that like and what was going on?
Well, with me, there was just, you know, when I worked for the city of Monterey was like Snow White, as you well know. It probably is still Snow White.
You mean you're talking racially?
Exactly.
Okay.
And, when I was growing up, you know, I'm a child of the 60s, and I don't know how you feel about it, but the way I view it is, to me, in my lifetime, that was the time where people, the races, were pretty much all together. All the people, young people my age, black, white, brown, yellow, whatever, you know what, we had a different conscience, and it was all about everybody getting together and getting along, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was how I viewed the world. Until I got to the Monterey Police Department. And I had never really experienced like a lot of racism, especially in a place that you work. And, you know, I was raised on Adam 12 and Dragnet, and, you know, I was a police explorer for the city of Ontario, and, you know, all cops were brothers behind the badge. All my buddies in high school, we all hung out and wanted to become cops. And when I got to the city of Monterey is when I really ran into racism on the department, you know, from the people that I was serving with.
Yeah, I can't even imagine just the experience of what you, you know, being African-American, you know, I mean, just the...
No, I'm black. I've never been to Africa.
You know, the thing is, I'm happy you told me that because I feel like I don't know what to say. It used to be like, you know, 10 years ago or 5 years ago, I feel like I'm the squarest kind of, you know, when you say you're square, that is square,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, I don't, you like black.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, yeah. I think that's like the new thing. I guess it's not that new.
No, black came before African-American.
I never got the African-American thing because I think of people who living here as American.
Exactly. Exactly. You
know? I mean, I just went along with whatever.
Well, and you know, the genesis of black, I mean, that's what we always call ourselves. But remember that song by James Brown, Say It Loud, I'm Black and I'm Proud?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that pretty much established it, etched it in stone, you know, and basically that was about... you know, self-esteem and feeling good about yourself and being proud of who you are.
You know, it makes perfect sense to me. I mean, you know, white, black, I mean, that's what people, you know, no one cares if they're called white.
Right.
So I never got why that switched over to African-American and
yeah.
me being, again, the square guy, I'm like, just, okay, whatever.
Well, what I think it is a lot of these pseudo-intellectuals that came up with that term African-American, you know.
It's just awkward for me. I've always felt like, you know, because I want to be respectful.
Sure.
So now I say the African-American thing, and then you tell me, no, it's black.
Yeah, but and you know what? I'm just saying my preference.
Okay.
I didn't take it as an insult.
No, I know, but I want to be, you know, I want to be respectful to
right.
people.
Right.
Of any race.
Right.
So so you're in Monterey, and what year is this?
This was in 1978 and 79.
Okay. So late 70s. Disco is big.
Yes.
You are kind of, you're a fish out of water then, mm-hmm. right? Because you're the only black guy on, are you the only black guy on the force?
The only black guy in the department, yes.
Okay, so there is their minority hiring, right?
Well, you know, ironically, the city of Monterey didn't get any federal funds for, you know, hiring minorities because it's a rich city, you know? And actually how I got hooked up with the city of Monterey is I was a military policeman. I was in the Army assigned to Fort Ord, but I was assigned for a while to the Presidio of Monterey Detachments. That's the Defense Language School.
Okay.
And it's right smack dab in the
middle. What's Defense Language? I don't know what that means.
Well, it's where the military, and at that time, actually the entire federal government sent everybody who was either in the military or who worked for the federal government who had to learn a foreign language.
Oh, okay.
That's where they sent them.
I see. You speak a foreign language?
No.
Okay. But somehow you were there.
I was there because okay. I was a military policeman. So.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yes.
And so when you say there was racism, what exactly was going on? And by the way, if you're, again, just tuning in, 800-893-9562 is our number. 800-893-9562. 800-893-9562. I've got Guyron here. He is a... I like to call him celebrity. What do I call you? Celebrity personal guard to the celebrity.
Well, you said bodyguard to the stars, right?
Bodyguard to the stars. That's right. Guyron Barnes here. So we were talking about the lowest point in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And you said it was when you were an officer, city officer in Monterey.
Right.
You're the only black officer mm-hmm. in the force. What was going on racially that made you aware that there's a problem?
Well, you know, when I was there, I had like the highest stats as far as felony arrest and arrest period. And I was very proactive, you know, being born and raised in Los Angeles, you know, you're more aware of criminal behavior when, you know, it's easy for you to spot it. But, you know, the big thing for me was when I'm walking down the hallway and I'm walking towards my mailbox, which is right next to the watch commander's office. And as I round the corner, I hear my patrol sergeant and my watch commander talk about how much they hate niggers, you know. And, you know, this is a conversation amongst themselves that I just happened to walk into.
You don't think they were trying to have you hear it?
You know what? I don't know. To be honest with you, I don't know. You know, I just know that I heard it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I could see it's making you emotional right now.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, another thing is there was a guy that went through the academy with me, and, like, this guy barely made it through the academy, okay? He's a good guy. You know, I'm not mad at him or anything, but he's a white guy who crashed and totaled 3 units within a year during our probationary period, crashed 3 police cars, and nothing happened to him. But me, make a long story short, we had this real intense pursuit through the city of Monterey. And at one point, city of Monterey, they have tunnels. And so this guy went in the wrong way through a one-way tunnel. And we pursue him. We were able to get him stopped and everything and arrested and everything. Well, as I exit my vehicle and open my door, our police cars were white. I opened my door and bumped the suspect's car with the door. And it barely even caused like a paint transfer, okay? But the sergeant goes ballistic, writes up an official traffic collision report, you know, as if I'm in a traffic collision. They haul me in front of the city safety committee. And, you know, how many ways can you say, well, I opened the door and bumped the suspect's car? You can't, you know, but they're grilling me, giving me a third degree. So basically, you know, I guess my demeanor and my answers after a while got sort of curt. And so I get written up for being smart to the city safety committee, you know. And, you know, I at that time, you know, I just fell into like a deep depression because, you know, you figure you're a 22, 23-year-old kid and you idolize cops, you idolize police work, and you have this great, you know, dreams of working and, you know, doing good things, and you get hit with that, you know. And at the time, I really didn't know how to deal with it.
So how did you deal with it?
I got depressed. You know, I mean, there would be times where I was, you know, I was to show up, I was scheduled for duty, and I just couldn't wake up. On the days that I had to work, go to work, I just couldn't wake up, and I really didn't know what it was at the time, you know. And so I was late to work a couple times. And I remember one time, I guess the straw that broke the camel's back is, you know, I got off work, went to sleep early and everything, you know, and set the alarm clock, and I wake up and my sergeant's knocking on my front door at my house. You know, I had overslept and missed briefing, slept through the alarm clock and everything, you know. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I know today that I was depressed. I didn't know that back then. I just couldn't figure it out.
So what happened? Did you end up just quitting?
Well, I was given the option to resign in lieu of termination. You know, all this stuff started happening the closer I got to completing my probationary period, because I'd be working in like in the city, the surrounding cities, like Seaside, Pacific Grove, a lot of the sheriff's guys and the highway patrol guys, you know, they'd say, hey, you know, you're going to be the first black guy to ever make it past probation on Monterey. Because, I mean, it was a matter of weeks before. And you know, I never thought about, like, how'd this guy know that how long I've been on probation? You know what I mean? And so the closer it got to probation, you know, all of a sudden my reports were no good. You know, I never had a complaint about my reports before. As a matter of fact, the detectives used to like my reports because it contained all the information to where if I had to turn the case over to the detectives, you know, all the information was there, you know?
Well, I mean, hearing this story and your experience is infuriating.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it is what it is, you know. But like I said, I wish, like a lot of things that my parents told me growing up, you know how it is when you're young, you don't think your parents know what they're talking about sometimes. And my parents never raised me to be, you know, racist or anything like that. But they just told me to be aware, because everybody's not your friend. Even if they smile in your face, they're not your friends.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry. I mean, you know, that you'd have to experience something like that. I can't even fathom, you know, your life experience. It's terrible that you had to go through that. I'm amazed that you... It's good that what made you not just give up on law enforcement?
You know what? I had worked for the state for a while, and I was all set to get hired by LAPD, but at that time LAPD was hired. They were under a federal court ruling to hire so many women by a certain date, and see, LAPD played a lot of games with the physical requirements for women. And they structured the physical agility test and they slanted it in a way to where it required a lot of upper body strength. Well, you know, most women don't have the upper body strength as men, so they used to use that as an excuse for a long time. And you know how the LAPD is. They have to be dragged and be dragged kicking into the 20th century. So the judge saw through that and said, hey, look, you can't hire anybody until you get X amount of females.
So the timing just happened to be.
Yeah, exactly. So I got reinstated with the state, and I just decided to stay with them.
Okay. Well, it's a good thing you did.
Yeah.
You know? When you see Barack Obama as president with the kind of racism you experienced, how's that feel?
You know what? It's great because I think he's the... To be the first, he's a great one. Just like Jackie Robinson was the first in baseball. You know what? I think Providence or God or whatever you want to think put him in the right place to do that. As a matter of fact, I had a chance to actually protect then-Senator Obama before he got elected during the primaries, during the Democratic primaries.
I bet that was a thrill.
It was great. It was great. You know, it's funny. I have a picture of him and I together that a photographer took. And we had prepared for his arrival. And, you know, for some reason, he just walked up to me and he said, hey, I really want to thank you for being here and I appreciate what you do. And he shook my hand and a photographer was right there at that moment to capture the picture.
Yeah. Would you have ever thought I would guess the answer is no, with your personal experience in Monterey, that you'd be sitting there talking to this man who eventually became a president?
No, not at all. Not at all.
Yeah.
And, you know, like I said, I worked for the state and also I worked for NASA. I was a NASA security policeman up until a couple years ago, as a matter of fact.
So you really, seems like your career has just been a massive amount of just unbelievable experiences.
Oh, yeah. 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 I'm very blessed, you know, and, you know, like I said, I'm not really like a religious, organized religion kind of guy, you know, but I truly believe that even through the darkest times, you know, my God has saw me through a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's great. I mean, it's obviously you've got something that's keeping you going.
Definitely.
Like I said, because there's a real positive spirit. And when, you know, just a reminder, I worked with Guyron on Deal or No Deal. I was the writer for the show. My credit was creative consultant. And so I saw Guyron very often, basically at every taping of the show. He was there He was in charge of the security detail, which is quite a big responsibility because at that time, Deal or No Deal was a major hit. And with the visibility, it could bring anyone out of the woodworks. And there were times, Guyron, where I remember you would be looking over the audience and some people were removed. Is that right?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. That did happen a few times.
I mean, there were some people that kept coming to the show that you recognized and they had to get, it was time for them to leave?
It was time for them to leave. And that was just based on... their actions and then some of the things that we did to find out exactly who they were.
Okay. So people don't realize, I think when you're doing a show like Deal or No Deal or any big show or the Grammys, the Emmys, you've got an audience in the building. That's where the real danger is, wouldn't you say?
It is, you know, because, you don't, basically they're an unknown quality.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, there are certain things in place, you know, like, as you probably noticed, the magnetometers and the wands and stuff and you know, inspecting the purses and the packages and all that kind of stuff. And see, that was a multifaceted, of course, it's for security reasons. But also, you know, especially when it came time for those, for our first $1 million winners, you know, we had to... I don't know if you remember that the first one we had, you know, we were confiscating cell phones left and right because we noticed people, even though they were told not to take pictures, we noticed them taking pictures and we confiscated the cell phones to protect the intellectual property, number one, of NBC and the show. But also, too, you know, we just wanted to keep, we didn't want the story to get out before those episodes actually
aired. That was a big deal.
Yeah,
time, Deal or No Deal was, you know, top 10. I mean, the amount of millions of viewers was impressive.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely. And, you know, like I said, so, you know, a lot of people, this sort of gets back to my original point. They just see us there in our suits standing around, or what they perceive to be standing around. but there's so much more to our job, and protection is a part of it. You know, protecting bodies are important, but also protecting the show itself. That was important to us also.
Yeah, that's actually a very interesting point. It's not just the personality, but every aspect. The NBC's hiring you.
Definitely.
Protected their show.
Right.
Didn't think of that. I forgot about that with the cameras and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So we were talking earlier on the phone briefly about this evening, and I said to you, I asked you if you do body cavity searches at your job. And mm-hmm. when you've been at the prison, how many years were you there?
I was there 13 years.
Okay. So, and that was in Chino?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so I, you know, as a comic and, we all make jokes about body cavity searches, but obviously, I mean, none of us have really ever had one. I mean, very few people actually have. So I was wondering if perhaps you would be willing to conduct a body cavity search on me right here live on the show.
Well, sure, you know, but the first part of a body search, body cavity search, is you got to have gloves.
Okay, well, we talked about that, and I did bring gloves.
Yes.
I've got them here. These are sterile gloves. You said they shouldn't be latex, is that right?
No latex, no.
So I was told these are definitely not latex, so I got these to your specification.
Okay.
They're called synthetic nitrile gloves, exam quality, one size fits all.
That's okay.
So, okay, I got that. And what else? You said you needed like a lubricant, right?
Well, you know what? It can, if there's any contraband found.
Right.
Technically, only medical personnel can remove contraband from a body cavity. However, there's this thing called exigent circumstances. So if I see like a balloon.
Right.
Up there and it's ruptured and it's filled with narcotics, well, exigent circumstances state, you know, dictate that I try to remove that as soon as possible for your safety.
Okay, well, I brought some, I brought two different lubricants. I brought petroleum jelly because I wasn't sure if that's what you needed.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got a KY, but I got the warming jelly just so I can use this later if I want. You know, I didn't want to waste the money on just one exam. So let's do this. Let's see. Why don't you take me through the motions? If you need to come over by me, you can just put your headsets down and use my mic.
Okay.
And I'm going to experience, if you're just listening, Guyron Barnes, security guard to the stars, a former prison guard who conducted body cavity searches for how many years would you say you did that?
13 years.
How many?
13 years.
How many bodies do you think you've had your hand in?
Not too many in, but I've inspected a lot of anuses.
Okay, great. And I'm happy to say that I guess mine will be the last one on the list for today.
I hope so.
Yes. Okay. If you're just joining us, I can describe what's happening. He's putting the gloves on. These are sterile gloves. This is what you'd be doing in prison?
Definitely. We'd have these searches most of the time took place in the hospital at the prison. And so we're close to the medical personnel in case we have to do an extraction.
Okay, great. And so you've got your right glove on. These are blue gloves, and there's no powder on them. So it's a good thing that there is a lubricant, that I've provided a lubricant.
But hopefully we won't find any contraband.
Okay, that would be good. But getting into the spirit of this, I'm willing to go the full mile. Okay, so give me directions as to what I would do if we were in a, let's do it.
Okay, all right, first, inmate Cohen, I need you to take off your shirt.
Okay, I'm taking my shirt off. My shirt has just hit the floor.
Okay, well, I would pick up that shirt and shake it out myself.
Okay, he's shaking out the shirt.
Make sure
there's nothing there. Okay.
All right, inmate Cohen.
I get nervous when you say inmate. Let's just call me Vic.
Okay. All right, Vic. Yes. I want you to raise your hands above your head.
Okay, my hands are above my head.
Okay. I'm looking under your arms.
Okay, feel. Do it like you really would. Would you feel around?
No, I wouldn't feel because I don't see anything.
Okay.
Okay. Now, okay, put your hands down. Open up your mouth. Roll back your tongue. All right.
My mouth is open and my tongue is back.
Okay. Now, with your index fingers, grab both sides of your mouth and... Okay. Okay, nothing in the mouth.
Okay.
All right. Inmate Cohen, take off your pants.
Okay. I'm...
And hand them to me.
Okay. I'm taking off my pants. Now, my boots came off. What do you do with those?
I would shake them down after you look at them, turn them.
Okay. What do we have in the boots?
Nothing.
Okay. Boots are off.
Okay. Inmate Cohen, take off your pants and hand them to me.
Okay. My pants are coming off. At this moment, left leg is out. Now my right leg is out. Now I have my wallet. I have my wristband. I have my watch on and a bracelet. Should I take that off?
Okay. Oh, definitely. Yes.
Okay. What are you doing? You're going through my pants?
Your pants to make sure that there's no contraband.
Contraband meaning?
Or weapons. Narcotics.
Contraband means narcotics?
Yes. Narcotics or anything that you're not supposed to have.
Okay.
Okay. She could be kites, what they call kites, which are prison letters that are sent back and forth.
Is that a problem? You can't communicate?
Well, a lot of the gangs use them to communicate hit lists and stuff like that.
So the mail's monitored?
Definitely.
Okay.
Okay. Inmate Cohen, let me have your underwear.
Pardon? What about my socks? Do you need the socks off?
That comes later.
Okay. So you want my underwear off?
I want your underwear off.
Okay. My underpants are off.
Okay. Hand me your underwear.
I am completely...
Hand me your underwear.
Okay, I'm reaching down and I'm getting on my underwear.
Okay, hand me your underwear.
Okay, I've just handed my underwear to Guyron.
And I've inspected his underwear.
Okay, what did you find?
Nothing.
Nothing. No skid marks?
No skid marks or anything.
Okay, no contraband?
No contraband.
Okay.
All right, Vic, hand me your left sock.
Okay, I'm handing him my left sock. I am completely naked except for the sock on my right leg.
Okay.
What are you doing?
This sock is clear.
Okay, and what does that mean, clear? No contraband?
No contraband. No weapons.
Contraband meaning drugs or letters?
Yeah, illegal communications.
Okay, I'm totally naked except for one tube sock on my right leg.
And let me have that.
Okay, I'm taking that off right now. I'm peeling. It is now off. I'm totally naked in the studio.
Okay, and this sack checks out okay. All right, now what I want you to do...
Yes.
...is raise your arms, put your hands out to the side.
Like this?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, squat down.
Okay, I'm squatting down.
Oh, excuse me. I forgot. It's been a while. All right, I need you to raise your scrotum.
Okay, I'm raising my scrotum.
Okay, I'm looking at your scrotum. Okay.
He is looking at my scrotum.
Okay, drop your scrotum and hold your dick.
You call it a dick in the prison?
That's what we call it, yes.
Really? That's the official name?
Dick,
okay,
yes.
I'm holding my dick.
Okay, there's nothing secreted in those areas?
No.
Okay, now I need you to turn around.
Okay, I'm turning around.
Okay. All right, now I want you to squat down.
I'm squatting down. My backside is facing Guyron, and I'm squatting.
And cough. Okay, I see something.
Pardon me?
Excuse me. Keep your position.
Okay, he spots something in my rectum, it appears.
Yes, and at this point, I would call for my partner so we have another witness, and also in case you decide to get violent.
Okay, Jeremy could be your witness. Jeremy, can you come in here? You're going to be his witness that there's something that something's been discovered in my behind. Jeremy's the board operator. He also runs the place here.
Yeah.
And he's going to be, you can observe Jeremy. If Jeremy's your partner, what do you say to Jeremy?
Jeremy, do you see what the inmate has secreted in his rectum?
There's definitely something in there.
Okay.
Okay, Jeremy has confirmed. Why do you need two people for that?
Well, it looks good on the report, so we have two witnesses going against you in court instead of one.
Okay, so they've discovered that I am trying to sneak something in my rectum.
Okay. Now, I actually removed it because it was mostly in your butt cheek. It wasn't in your rectum. If it was in your rectum, I'd have to call for medical personnel to remove it itself.
Okay. But what is it?
This looks like a kite.
Looks like a kite, like actually, a letter of some sort.
It's a card.
Okay. Oh, it's a thank you card.
Thank you card, yes.
I wrote you a thank you card.
Oh. Dear Guyron, thank you for doing the show. Great seeing you. All the best, Vic.
Have you ever had anyone that you've done a body cavity search give you a thank you card?
Never, never. This is a first. This is a first. And I will sterilize it and cherish it.
You know, I brought an envelope. You can take that home with you.
Definitely. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
No, let's finish the search.
Let me finish the search. Okay.
So you've discovered something in my rectum. I guess that's...
Okay, now I need you to... I removed the first thing, so I need you to bend over it, spread your cheeks.
Okay, he's getting a little bit...
And cough. Now, usually when the cheeks are spread and an inmate coughs, that would dislodge anything that's jammed up the rectum.
Okay.
But let me double check.
Are you really looking at my rectum?
Yes.
He's staring at my rectum right now.
Well, Vic, I got good news and bad news.
What's that?
Well, the good news is I don't see any more contraband, okay?
Okay.
But the bad news is you've got a polyp in here.
Get out of here. Get that thing away from me.
I can remove it.
I've been circumcised already. I don't need that. So are we done with the search or do you need to explore?
We're done with the search.
Okay, what about all this lube I bought?
You can take it for your fifi bag.
Okay, so at this point, there would be no reason to explore my rectum.
Not at this point, no.
Even though there was a thank you card in there?
Even though that there's a thank you card. I feel confident that there's no contraband or weapons
Because I feel like you're being light on me because you know it's me. But if you really had a guy come in with a thank you card jammed in his ass, wouldn't you be sticking your finger up his ass?
No. If I had any more doubts, like I said, we're in the hospital already, and I would take him over to the medical personnel, and they would do a deeper probe.
Okay, great. Well, why don't you get back in your seat? I'm going to get dressed. And hold on. Jeremy, you witnessed this. What did you think?
That was a great body cavity search. I could tell it's done by a real professional, and he went through every step of it, and it was thorough. It was good. That was good.
It was thorough, and I'll tell you, you know, it's got to be really scary for someone having that done for the first time. Like we got a phone call, by the way. Let's go right to that phone call. Hello, caller. What's your name?
Yeah, hi. My name is Vince.
Vince?
Hi, Vince.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing, man?
All right.
Hey, so I'm watching on Skid Row Studios Ustream, and I got to see the whole cavity search, and I'm very impressed.
There's no way that was on.
At the size of Vic's cock. Very good. What do you think? I mean, Vic's a little guy, and, like, I've never been able to see. You can't really see his cock on this thing.
Uh-huh.
But what do you think? Like, if you've seen a lot of cocks, like, how does he rate on average?
Oh,
like, is he...
I think Vic is above average, you know. You know what the old saying is, dynamite comes in small packages.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, you know, I think that Vic handles more of his fair share of business.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, Vince, when you're doing these searches, like... Do you and you see, like, a lot of different people? Do you guys make jokes at the guys with the little dicks and stuff? Do you go talk about it?
Not to their face, no.
No, but I'm saying, like, between you and your colleagues.
Oh yeah, stuff, you know? You know what? I mean, yeah. If it comes up, you know, especially if you see some abnormalities, you know, doing these type of searches, I've actually seen guys who have tattooed their penises.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, they have actual tattoos on their penis. Could you imagine that?
Anyone have
what
a
kind of tattoos?
One guy.
What gang is that?
You know, I don't know exactly what gang, you know. It was mostly the Hispanics.
Really? Does it say mom right on the tip?
No.
Or the heart?
Let me tell you a story. Remember we talked about earlier getting your eye busted, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, so we're in a rec yard,
Hold
right?
Hold on a second. Before we go there, because I want to... No, Vince, did you have... He'll put a pin in that, as they say, that story. Vince, anything else you wanted to ask real quick?
No, I mean, I just wanted to call in and say great show.
Thank you. I appreciate you listening. Were you
and
calling
just for those of you listening, just like I am, like, Vic really did, like, strip down. Like, this isn't, like, a radio gag.
Yeah, no, I thought it was a gag, but no, it happened.
No.
Yeah.
What do you think, Jeremy? How does Vic look naked?
Oh, he did very well. I mean, he's not the first person to get naked in this studio, but he might be the best looking one to get naked in
the
studio.
And the first one to have a body cavity search
in
the studio.
That's absolutely true.
I'd also like to comment, too, that, you know, like, just the size of Guy Ron, you know, he's a big guy and Vic is a little guy. It looked like a little kid being molested.
Well, that's not what we were going for.
Hey, Vince, so you really did see this on the video?
Yeah, that was great, man.
You got to be full
like,
of
you
shit.
Know what?
I thought that the video was turned off, actually.
No, video's wide on. We get to see Vic's cock and everything.
He's so full of it. There's no way.
Oh, my God.
No, this is true.
I really thought it was off.
How many fingers?
I'm sorry, Vic.
Okay, that's okay. You know what? I've done worse. I have no problem.
Okay.
But thank you. Thank you for the call, Vince.
Is this the weirdest thing you've ever done, Vic?
No.
I can tell you no.
You said that pretty quickly.
I can tell you no. We had some interesting times on Deal or No Deal.
Yes, we did. There was a time.
Have you ever seen Vic naked before, or is this the first time?
No, I've seen Vic naked before.
You have?
Yeah.
Really? And what are the circumstances?
Yeah, I'm curious. I don't know when you've seen me totally naked.
At Deal or No Deal.
When? I was never totally naked at Deal or No Deal.
I believe you were totally naked at Deal or No Deal. Yes. Yes.
You'll have to talk to me after the show. Okay. I don't remember. I think that there was one time, the closest I got, I was in a pair of Daisy Dukes. And because the girl, the 26 models, that was her costume. And then you handcuffed me to a pole.
That was one. Yeah.
And then you uncuffed me because you felt that would be considered false imprisonment.
Yeah. And see, once again, protecting my client and protecting the show. Because, I mean, I know you and Howie are great friends and you guys have worked together for a long time. But you never know. You know?
But the funny part about that story is Garwin was also the one who locked me to the pole. And then suddenly he's worried about false imprisonment.
Yeah, well, see, the thing is, it just went on for a long, long time.
Well, that was the joke. That was part of the joke, you know, when you see me in, I mean, not that anyone wants to see it, right?
Yeah, but I mean, come on, that was an inordinate amount of time. I felt sorry for you.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. It didn't bother me.
Okay.
I actually enjoyed it. It was fun. It was a funny get. The joke was that they tricked me into handcuffing me to a pole where all the models would walk by, and I was wearing their outfit and these very tight, small shorts.
And a lot of models, you got pictures with a lot of models who were posing next to you with their Daisy Dukes and your Daisy Dukes on.
Right, but it went on for too long, I guess.
Yeah, for mine.
For your taste.
For my taste, yes.
Yeah, that was a great show.
It was. It really was.
Again, if you want to, we're going to be wrapping up pretty soon here, but if you want to give us a call, the number is 800-893-9562. That's 800-893-9562.
Vic, yes. One thing. Did you know, I don't know if you've ever had like international listeners, but I do know for a fact there's a lady listening in New Zealand. Her name is Maya Jones.
Oh, are you doing like a shout out?
If that's appropriate, yes.
We have a listener in New Zealand and two in Australia that I can see right now.
Right, and that's Maya. Christos is in Australia, and I believe Hans is in Australia also.
Bodyguard. So you're bringing in a little bit of a national flair to the show tonight.
Oh, yeah, and that's, you know, our bodyguard association. You know, I put a shout out on the page, or I put an announcement on the page.
Those
are actually members that are listening to the show right now.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Yes.
I'm very excited. Are any of them cute and single?
Because
evidently they've all seen me naked on the video.
Maya's married, but Christos and Hans, I'm not so sure. I don't know of their status.
Okay. Is Hans a guy?
Yes.
I'm not interested in that.
Okay.
But thanks for thinking of me.
All right. Well, you know, this is Hollywood, man.
Yeah. Now, but that experience that we went through where that was not even simulated. I mean, that was like a...
Right.
That is truly what goes on.
That is truly what goes on.
And the thing that was most, I found horrible was when you had me open my mouth with pulling my cheeks apart.
Yes.
And the thing about it is I know you. So, and God forbid someone, you know, you're in a situation and you don't know anyone.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be just the worst.
You know, it's got to, it is, I guess you can say dehumanizing. That's a phrase that's thrown around a lot, you know. But usually by the time an inmate gets to a state prison, it's routine for them. As weird as it sounds, it's routine for them. They just, most of the time you don't have to give them directions.
Huh. Now, tell me, in all seriousness, how many men do you think you have been inside? And I mean that not off the clock. I mean... on the job, how many men have you been inside with body cavity searches over the years?
I've given body cavity searches, thousands probably, but I've never been inside because, once again, only medical personnel can go inside and actually remove something from a body cavity.
Okay. So you've looked inside thousands of men's behinds.
Yes, yes.
You've seen thousands and thousands of rectums.
And I've seen...
Can you say that with me?
Thousands and thousands. I've seen thousands and thousands of rectums. Just like, what was that, the astronomer? Billions?
Wait, I need you to say it one more time. This is for our promo.
Okay.
I need you to repeat after me. I've seen thousands... I have seen thousands of men's rectums.
I have seen thousands of men's rectums.
Oh, look at this. We've got a phone call. Go ahead, caller.
Hi, this is Gus.
Hey, Gus.
I wanted to tell you, this apparently is not the craziest thing you've done, but this is the craziest shit I've heard on radio in a long time. That was fantastic. That was some fun, strange stuff, although the video is going to haunt me for days.
You really did not see a video. I'm going to fucking kill Jeremy.
It depends how honest you want me to be, but it's... I may cry myself. That was like anti-porn, whatever. But that was, God bless this show. That is fantastic. You guys are great.
Hey, Gus, I want to thank you for calling. And Gus is a good friend, and he's also the host of a Sunday show, Weekly Wrap-Up, right? Dude.
Yes, sir. Sundays at 4 o'clock. But you guys, I mean, you were hysterical. You guys are wild. That is the crazy. I also want to know how long you had the card in your ass.
That's a great question. I could barely read it because the ink had bleeded. Evidently, it's hot in the studio. No, actually, Yeah, I tucked it in my ass right before we walked. I walked into the studio. I did, and because you know, and I folded it. And you know, at first I had it too crunched up, and it was starting to cut into my rectum. So I had to pull it out.
You're not an art department person here to take care of that.
Yeah, we're low budget here. I had to do it myself. And in the card, just so you know, Byron, that card was brown before I put it in.
Oh, okay.
Because the card is brown.
I was wondering, you know, yeah. But...
Yeah, that was... And I made sure I was tidy back there.
Definitely.
Because I'm a professional.
Yeah, I mean, no...
He cleaned himself up for you, dude. That's nice.
Well, and, actually
you know,
did.
There was no odors or anything like that, you know.
What a testimonial. Can I use that on my J-Date profile?
There you go.
When body cavity searched, Vic had no odor.
No odors.
So, Gus, I'm really happy you called in, and it's great to hear your voice. And thanks for listening. It really means a lot.
No worries, man. It's a great show. You guys are hysterical. Have a great rest of it. I don't want to talk over my time.
All right, thank you, Gus.
Thank you, Gus.
That is Gus. So, God, now I'm blowing his last name. Jeremy.
August.
Isn't it Gus?
Huh? Ken Gus August.
Right. So Gus August. Ken, but we call him Gus. And his show is great. And he's a brilliant, he's got a brilliant mind. And he's a really funny guy. He's also, I am part of a podcast with him on Saturdays, Guy Ron.
Oh, really?
Maybe you could come by and give all the guys, yeah, it's called Bad Advice.
Bad Advice?
It's on Saturdays at 4 p.m.
Okay.
Yeah, you could come by and stick, you know, look up everyone's ass.
Right.
And well, see what you see. You know, you might find something.
Well, actually, I will be in town on Saturday.
Maybe not this Saturday. I'll let them know.
Okay.
So we're going to just finish up here real quick, but you were telling me a story, and I said we're going to put a pin in it, and mm-hmm. I wanted to give you that opportunity to share that.
Okay. Well, you know, like I said, we had talked about the whole thing of getting your eye busted, you know?
And for those of you who forget, that's when an inmate is looking directly into the guard's eyes as the inmate is masturbating.
Either masturbating or exposing himself. But we were on a rec yard movement one time, and you know all the inmates are out there lifting weights or playing basketball or running laps or whatever they were doing. So this one inmate goes, "Hey, man, you want to see my bird?" You know? And, you know, sometimes the inmates, they have, like, pets, you know? Like, they'll have, like, a bird that they're feeding and nurturing and, you know... Right. And so I said, "Yeah, man, let me see your bird." Well, this guy unzips his pants and pulls out his penis, and he had an eagle, the face of an eagle, tattooed on his penis.
And I'm not really sure how to react to that.
Well, it's just, I mean, you know.
Well, it's funny to me is that's the story you want to talk about, yet you had your head up my ass about 10 minutes ago. That's just par for the court. For you, that's just a normal day at the office. But you're going to tell me a great story about a guy who had an eagle head. You had your head up my ass, Guy Ron.
No, not necessarily up your ass, but I was definitely inspecting, you know.
You definitely saw my sphincter.
Well, I did as I was trained. Yeah, I saw your sphincter.
Yeah, how did you think it looked?
Well, it wasn't quivering, you know, so I know you're straight.
No, that's a joke, right? I don't know what goes on in prison. Thank God.
You know what? It's not like Oz, but a lot of stuff does go on, yes.
Well, we're going to wrap things up here. I want to thank you for being here. And Guy Ron, before I put a little ribbon around it,
mm-hmm.
and we close this show, is there anything you wanted to add that we kind of missed or that you think is important for people listening to know?
Sure. You know, and like I said, this gets back to my industry, the protection industry. There are many, many professionals out there that, and like I said, 99.9% of the things that we do for people is not known because it's not, you can't see it, you know. And I'm talking about the immense amount of training that we undergo, the preparation once we get a client and we design a protocol for their exact needs. And, you know, we have some really, really talented professionals out there. And, you know, I just feel blessed to be a part of, I mentioned the NABA because, you know, I have the ability.
Again, can you remind us, NABA, what that stands for?
Oh, North American Bodyguard Association.
Okay.
You know, I have the ability just by getting on the phone, I could arrange protection in any city, in any state, in the country, and just about any country in the world. And it's not just about calling people and say, "Hey, show up." These are vetted professionals. These are the cream of the crop, the most ethical and vetted people in the industry, you know, and that's what, that's basically what I want to get across. You know, we're more than guys that just stand around in suits. We're not the guys that you see on TMZ, you know, slapping cameramen. You know, we are professionals.
Yeah, and also I just want to thank you because while you did give me that body cavity search, and that was obviously playful and fun, at least for me, because I don't get a lot of attention sexually these days. So for me, it was quite a thrill. I'm kidding. But no, but we were, you know, it was obviously a lighthearted moment, but you're a serious guy.
Oh yeah.
And you take your career very seriously.
Definitely.
And you take what you do seriously. What we did, that was just something that you're, that was back in your past when you worked in the prison system, which you've been away from for a number of years.
Right. Well, that, and also, you know what, I mean, just the relationship that, you know, you, Howie, Rich.
And that's Howie Mandel.
Yes.
Who you were working with on Deal or No Deal.
Yeah, and Rich Thurber. You know, one of the biggest things in the business is not so much the personality, it's their inner circle or the people that are around them, you know. Because for whatever reason, a lot of times we're viewed as a threat. But you people, you know, you guys were just so welcoming. And you never told me how to do my job. You know, you never told me how to do my job. There were, as you well know, there are certain times when I brought concerns and had a contingency plan to deal with them, and you guys said, okay, no problem, you know. And so, you know, that's rare in my industry, you know. That's very rare in my industry. And so, you know, I'd do anything for you guys.
Well, that's really nice, and I feel the same way, and I'm sure Howie and Rich do as well. Rich Thurber was also a creative consultant on Deal or No Deal during the run of the show, and he's also a producer and works with Howie exclusively.
And you know, even the executives for the show, for Deal or No Deal, you know, it was the same thing, you know. And, you know, a lot of times security people, especially in that setting, were viewed as outsiders because, you know, we're not union or we don't have a technical craft or a trade to contribute to the show. And a lot of times we're looked as outsiders. But, you know, Deal or No Deal was so welcoming. I mean, we're invited to everything that the crew was invited to, you know. And, you know, I still have my bicycle, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, 1 year everyone got a Deal or No Deal bicycle on the staff, as well as a bunch of other stuff. It was, we were giving away stuff to the audience, and it turns out everyone on staff also got what everyone in the audience was getting.
Exactly.
And it, that was an amazing experience.
Yes, it was.
And people on that show were extraordinary, including Scott St. John, the executive producer, and Michonne Nix, and everyone else.
Yes, and you know, like I said, that's, from my perspective, from what I've seen and done in the industry, unheard of.
Yeah, to include you and not treating you like outside help, but really you're part of the family and the staff.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I talked to Rich and I actually texted Howie to let him know. I actually left a phone message letting him know you were going to be on the show. And I'm sure he got a kick out of that because, you know, we haven't, he remembers you very well and speaks, you know, Guyron's Guyron. We know who Guyron is.
Right.
So, and the show's been off for a number of years, you know, 3 years, 4 years. So, you know, you definitely left a very good impression and you're a great guy.
Oh,
you really are.
Thank you.
And it was very nice of you to drive all the way out here from, he lives out, I'm not going to say where, because you're in security. We don't want to give your location away. But
yeah, we can say the high desert.
Okay, the high desert. And so we're going to wrap it up here. I want to, again, thank you. I don't want to end it. But we kind of need to.
Sure, sure,
you
know, I understand.
Jeremy, anything you want to add before we say goodbye?
That was very interesting. It's very, I always like to understand what goes on behind the scenes and to meet someone that is truly behind the scenes and making sure that you know, everyone's safe and things like that. It's interesting.
Did you get the sense? Did you think that Guyron gave us enough of a sense of what really goes on? I mean,
I think there's many things he probably can't tell us, which makes sense. But, you know, meeting someone like Guyron and, you know, I feel much better about those situations. You know, he definitely seems to know what he's talking about.
Yeah, and out of respect to Guyron, obviously on It's a Fair Question, I like to ask a lot of questions that potentially could be uncomfortable.
Right.
And but out of respect to what Guyron does, and I know he told me ahead of time he's not going to take personal questions about his clients. He'll mention them.
Sure.
And I wanted to respect that.
Sure.
So, and you were true to that.
Oh, yeah. That, and like I said, that's part of what we paid for is discretion.
Yeah, yeah. It, like you said, you're not going to see Guyron on TMZ, right?
No. I mean, the one thing that Guyron shared with me about TMZ and some of these other shows is that sometimes the celebrity will act like they're annoyed by the paparazzi.
Oh, yeah.
On purpose.
But they're actually, the paparazzi kind of has to, it's kind of like a dance. They have to read the mind of the celebrity, right?
Right. Well, and also, too, like, you know, you'll get a publicist or an agent involved. And, you know, sometimes the star is in on it. Sometimes, a lot of times the star isn't, you know. But all of a sudden, you know, we've done this massive preparation and advance work. And the paparazzi shows up in these places where, like, come on. You know, they have to have some type of inside information.
Like a school or...
Yeah, yeah, a school or yes, that's all I'll say.
But you were telling me that you have to make sure that sometimes you have to let the paparazzi get their shot. Even though the celebrity may be appearing to be upset, they're going to be more upset with you if you don't let the shot happen.
Well, you know, it's a dance, you know, and I do what I can, you know. There's different techniques that I can use to, you know... Like if it's an intimate shot with a celebrity and their child, you know, they're not getting it. You know, they're not getting it. But, I mean, there's just certain things. I mean, you know, there's certain things you can control and certain things that you can't control, you know.
Right. What was Paul McCartney? What was that about?
Paul McCartney is just, you know, part of his protection team while he was here in town. Mm-hmm. Great guy. Great guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Most of the great people I have found, the people I've had the chance to work with, are really, really solid, like Howie.
Right, right.
And many others. Joan Rivers was very nice when I had a chance to work with her, and many others.
Yeah, and I don't know how much time we have.
Well, we're wrapping up, but go.
Okay.
Let me hear.
All right, well, like I said, I was assigned to Paul McCartney, and this was, gosh, I think this was about 2006, and this was the first time he had been nominated for a Grammy in a long time. So he was here, he ended his tour here, went back to England, and he was nominated for a Grammy, so he came back. And this was going to be a short appearance, you know, so I wasn't involved at all. But I happened to be working the Grammys that year at the Staples Center. And so we, you know, we're doing our thing out there, and we're going down to eat. And they tell us, you know, they're giving us this lecture, like, don't approach any of the celebrities there, or the musicians or anything like that, blah, 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 blah. You know, like, I'm not going to run up to somebody. I'm not starstruck, as you well know. And so I just had, it was perfect timing. As I'm walking in, Sting and Mary J. Blige are just wrapping up One Love. And I mean, they were jamming. That's the best. What they saw on the show, you know, you probably heard rehearsals are usually better than the show, yeah. You know. And so I'm walking in on that. And also Paul McCartney and his manager are walking off stage, you know. And I'm, you know, I saw them, but I wasn't going to approach them. And his manager, John, says, hey, Guyron, hey, mate, how you doing, you know. And I said, hey, John, how you doing? And Paul, you know, comes, hey, mate, how you doing? As I'm walking towards him, all these producers and show people, they're looking, they got this scowl on their face, you know. But Paul McCartney comes up, John gives me a hug, and Paul gives me a hug, and he says, hey, mate, how you doing? What are you doing here? And I showed him my credentials for working the Grammys, and he goes, ah, you're just a whore for the money, you know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, those type of experiences are priceless.
Yeah, and that's nice to hear that he's that kind of guy.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, it's funny. All those other people, when they were scowling at me once, Sir Paul embraced me, all of a sudden they're smiling.
Like when the boss laughs, everyone laughs? Like that stereotype, that cliched?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Well, good. I hope one day that I'm in a position where I have to have a bodyguard and I know who to call.
Oh, yeah.
Because you're a great guy, Guyron. You really are.
Well, thank you, Vic.
And I can't thank you enough for being here on the show. And also with all of you listening, thank you very much for listening live, or if you've downloaded this show, I want to thank you. Also, I want to thank Jeremy. He's runs the show. He runs the whole deal here. Thank you, Jeremy, very much. And hopefully, please come back, download some more shows, subscribe, share with your friends. We want to keep building and growing. And once again, this has been Vic Cohen, and you've been listening to It's a Fair Question. Thanks, everyone. I'm Vic Cohen, and it's a fair question. It's a fair question. It's a fair question. I'm Vic Cohen, and it's a fair question. It's a fair, it's a fair, it's a fair, it's a fair question. I'm Vic Cohen, and it's a fair, it's a fair, it's a fair, it's a fair question.